Welcome to the Freedom Founder Podcast. I'm your host, Zach Duggar. Now, many have heard of burnout. It's a state of emotional, physical, and mental exhaustion. It's often caused by excessive and prolonged stress, or that feeling that you're just swamped at whatever it is you're doing. It might not just be in work, might be in areas of your life, family, other events going on. A lot of things can contribute to that. Now, my guest today, Michael D. Levitt, is the founder and chief burnout officer of the Breakfast Leadership Network. It's a San Diego and Toronto-based burnout consulting firm. He's a keynote speaker on the Great Resignation, Quiet Quitting, and Burnout. He's the host of the Breakfast Leadership Show. He's a certified NLP and CBT therapist, a Fortune 500 consultant, and author of his latest book, Burnout Proof, as well as two other books. So we're going to get into the topic today. I want to start a little bit, Michael, by first welcoming you on the show.
Great to be here with you today.
Thank you. And I wanted to ask, in regards to this, before you are doing what you're doing now, you had a career in working in the corporate industry, working with large corporations, organizations. Can you share a little bit about that experience, what type of work you were doing?
I've done all kinds of different things. My original career was public accounting. And as I joke with people, April 16th, I still have this sense of relief in my shoulders, even though I have not been in that profession since a long time ago. But still, there's it's in my DNA now. It's like, oh, why do my shoulders feel so much better today? It's because tax season is over. And for those that are in the midst of that right now, I feel you. I know what it feels like. It's tough go, but we're getting there, you know, we'll get there and get it all done. But for me, you know, I started off in that field and then ventured into a lot of different industries, both in corporate and also nonprofit, and worked in IT, worked in finance, worked in, you know, prior to my role with this organization, I was in healthcare. I worked in healthcare for over a decade, and I was a healthcare executive. And that's where I had my burnout experience. And it changed me for the better. Not that I would wish burnout on anybody, but for me, it was required for me, I think, to change the way that I was living and how I was approaching life. And also, you know, my mindset around life and work and the relationship between the two of them.
Yeah, absolutely. How you mentioned your burnout experience. Tell us a little bit more about what you went through during a period of time as you experienced that burnout.
Yeah, back in 2007, I was hired as a healthcare executive just outside of Windsor, Ontario. That's across the border from Detroit, Michigan, for those that aren't familiar with that area. And that's important to know, because when I get a little bit deeper into the story of what happened, it's important on the location where I was. So I was hired as this healthcare executive for the startup healthcare organization. I never worked in healthcare in my life. I had startup experience, but never in healthcare. And I was actually an employee there for a year before they told me why they hired me. So I just went, okay, they hired me. Okay, get to work. You know, they told me that they knew that I would be able to learn whatever I needed to learn and be able to adapt accordingly, which I did, which meant a lot of hours. As anybody that's ever launched a business, they know that there's a ton of hours involved. And even though I was an employee, I took it upon myself to make this organization mine. So I just went in all in and was working insane hours, basically 6 a.m. to 11 p.m. 7 days a week for two solid years.
Okay.
And when you do that, when you're working those types of hours, number one, you're typically not getting in the exercise or activity that you should. Mm-hmm. We all know that the executives have really good parking spots that typically are close to the building. So I wasn't getting in a lot of physical activity. Of course, working those long hours, my nutrition plan was not good. I'll give you a hint. It was basically ordering through a microphone, getting food handed to me in a brown bag, and then me inhaling it really quick. And much like my dog does with food, it just inhales it. It's like, did you even chew that? You know, so I think that was how I was too. So not getting exercise, eating foods that, well, quite frankly, were not good for me. And the stress of a startup, and that just built up over time. So fast forward a couple of years to May of 2009, and it was a Monday evening in the spring in May, and I was after work, I was mowing my front lawn, and I had an electric lawnmower because we had a small lawn, and gas prices were high then, as they are at this moment. So I had this electric mower, and this thing was bulky. It was old, weighed a ton, so it was really hard to turn. So I mow a first row on my lawn, and I go to turn to mow another row, and I felt this really sharp pain in the center of my chest, and it hurt. It was so painful that I couldn't finish mowing the lawn. I was able to get the lawnmower at least in the backyard and shut it off, and went inside, took some pain medication, and the pain went away unless I lifted anything with my right arm. I'm left-handed, so I don't tend to lift a lot of things with my right arm. I do more now than I did before, but you know, being a southpaw, you're usually using the left hand for pretty much everything. So not using that arm very often, didn't think much of it. When I lifted, that pain would be there, and it felt like I pulled a muscle. So I was like, okay, because that's what I blamed it on, because I thought, well, I just twisted wrong and pulled something. So went about my business, you know, really didn't bug me that much throughout the week. Thursday night of that week, went out to dinner at a local restaurant, and they had an all-you-can-eat special, and I took them up on that offer and ate all kinds of fried, greasy, really not good for you, but really tasty food, and of course, washed it down with a handful of adult beverages, and great night. And I get home, I go to bed, I wake up about an hour or so after I went to bed with that pain that I had Monday night, but it was at least 100 times worse. It literally felt like there was an elephant standing on my chest. I immediately thought, okay, well, indigestion kicked in early. So I went to the bathroom. I took some Tums. I was able to fall asleep. So Friday morning, I go to work. That pain that I'd been feeling anytime I lifted anything with my right arm was persistent. It wasn't going away. So after working about 45 minutes, and reminder, I'm working in a medical clinic. So I talked to my our lead physician, and you know, I said, explain to him what was going on. He said, okay, well, let's listen. So he listened to the stethoscope, and he just kind of looked at me a little bit. He said, you know what? It's probably nothing, but we've got the EKG equipment here. Why don't we run a couple tests just to make sure everything's okay, and then we'll go from there. It's like, okay, so give us a few minutes. We'll get the room prepped, and then we'll run the test. So after a few minutes, you know, our nurse calls us back, and I go back in there, and you know, all of a sudden they start laughing and making sexual harassment jokes because their boss was taking his clothes off at work in front of the employee, not typically allowed in most HR manuals. So they're I'm red as a tomato. I'm embarrassed. Can't believe what's going on. And finally they said, okay, enough laughs. Let's go ahead and do this. So they run the test. Yeah. They see the results. They're a bit perplexed. And they go, you know what? We haven't ran this test a lot. We're going to disconnect all the electrodes, and then we're going to reconnect them and put all the new leads on and run the test again. So they did. And the results came back the same. So they said, all right, we'll get dressed, and we're going to send this off to Hotel de Grace Hospital in Windsor, and we'll wait to hear what they say. A few minutes later, Dr. Gina from Hotel de Grace, cardiologist there, calls and says, tell Michael to get his butt in the hospital right now, and he cannot drive here. So I had a pretty significant heart attack that Thursday night. I had two blockages in my left anterior descending artery. Now, if you're not familiar with that artery, it has a nickname in cardiology world. It's called the Widowmaker. Because typically, if you have blockages in that artery and you have a cardiac event, you are being viewed instead of seen. And I was very, very fortunate, even to the point where Dr. Morsi, who was the surgeon that put the stents in my artery, when he came in that on the, because I went in on a Friday, Tuesday morning is when I was finally able to get the surgery, because backlogs and health, I'm not going to get into the details of healthcare challenges in Canada, but needless to say, he came in Tuesday morning to perform the procedure. First time I'd met Dr. Morsi, and my mom and my former wife were to the right of me, and I'm laying in the bed getting ready for the procedure. And Morsi comes up to me and he leans in, doesn't say good morning, doesn't say hi, doesn't say anything. He comes up, looks at the chart for a minute, and he leans in, he looks at me, he says, you know, you should be dead right now. And of course, my former wife and my mom are gasping and then start bawling. I look at him and I said, I see you skipped bedside manner class in medical school. And then we both started laughing. Of course, Jen and my mom were bawling and we're having, you know, laughs about it. And he's like, okay, this is what we're going to do. We're going to put the stents in and, you know, we'll see, we should be able to, maybe we might have to put in a third one, but from everything we're seeing, it's probably two. So they put in the stents, I get released the next day, and then I'm on short-term disability for about 17 weeks.
Okay.
Yep. After that, I go back to a job and they decided they wanted to go in a different direction. So they laid me off. Okay. So here I am 17 weeks later after having a cardiac event and now I'm losing my job. So in 2009, anybody remember the Great Recession? I'm across the border. I'm across the border from Detroit. You're familiar with this. The government had to bail out the auto sector because they were going to go out of business. So, GM and Chrysler for sure were in deep, deep trouble. Ford was teetering. So, when you're in that area, you know, those employers have such a huge ripple effect on the economy in that area still to this day. Not as much, but it's still a big footprint. So, if those companies go out of business, you have just horrible situations. So, nobody's hiring, no one's leaving. You know, there's cutbacks and layoffs because there's a recession going on. So here I am fresh off of this and going, okay, now I'm unemployed.
Yeah.
Now I have to go find a job. And I went on interview after interview and I was interviewing for months. And I finally found a role in Toronto, thankfully, which required a relocation and uprooting a young family and everything like that. So I get up to Toronto and I'm commuting on the weekends back to Windsor because we're trying to find a place to live in Toronto. So still had the house in the Windsor area. So I get a phone call. It was, I think, my second week there. My oldest daughter, who was 10 at the time, called. And she's crying, and I can't understand a thing she's saying. And finally, I was able to get from her that the bank had come and repossessed our family vehicle. So when you're on unemployment for a long period of time, and I know a lot of people, you know, may be in that situation or have been in that situation. You know that that money is not the same that you were making before. It's quite a bit less. So when you're on unemployment and you're on heart medication that costs $1,000 a month out of pocket and you have no drug insurance coverage, you got to make some choices. You know, feed the family, medication to keep me alive, or make the car payment or the mortgage. Well, you know what I did. And, you know, we reached out to our creditors and we told them exactly what was going on. And they were all very gracious to a point. They eventually have to collect. And of course, Great Recession, there was, you know, we know about the home foreclosures and all of that that was going on and people losing things and all of that. So it was a really difficult time, which is why I'm really concerned about what's, you know, happening now, because it's like, oh, I see history repeating itself. But I'm on the other side of that wall, which is an interesting perspective for me, you know, from a mental standpoint, just kind of looking at it and going, okay, this is not me. It's not happening to me. But it still, of course, brings back some challenging memories, to say the least. So here I am, heart attack, job loss. Oh, now the car has been repoed. Great. So we finally moved the family up at the end of May. So just about a year after my cardiac event. Get everything moved up. And then we realized that we forgot the bunk bed ladder for our daughter's bed back at the house that we were getting ready to list. So I was going back there the following weekend to visit with some friends. And then I said, well, I'll just swing by the house, grab the ladder and anything else that we had, you know, happened to forget. So I had my visit, went to the house, went into the front door, opened the screen door and saw the largest padlock I've ever seen in my life. You can't buy this padlock at Home Depot.
Right.
And it was a sticker on the door that said foreclosure. So in a year, 369 days to be exact, heart attack that should have killed me, lost my job during the Great Recession, had my car repossessed, and then finally my home foreclosed. And all of those things happened to me because I was burned out. I wasn't taking care of myself. Yeah. I was making mistakes at work that warranted the decision to go a different direction. When you don't make your car payment and you don't make your house payment, the bank has the right. It's a legal agreement. I've never been mad. I've never been mad at anybody. I was never mad at my former employers. I understood their decision on it. Was never mad at the bank that, you know, had the loan with our car. I've banked with them since. I don't bank at the bank that we got our mortgage through just because they don't have a presence as big of a presence here, but it wouldn't preclude me from banking with them again. I don't blame them. We had an agreement. I didn't meet the agreement terms, so they reserved the right and they exercised it. But all of those things happened because I was burned out. And when you have all those things happen to you at once, I had a couple choices. One, I could have said, wow, I'm Superman. I can withstand anything. All right, I'm just going to go about life carefree, not do anything, not make any adjustments. I'm still here. Yep. I'm alive. I'm great. I knew really quick that that was not the right choice to make. So I said, all right, I need to, one, start living better, healthier. And also start approaching my relationship with work and me differently. And that is an ongoing thing. A lot of people, you know, look at me and go, wow, you've got it together. I'm like, yeah, more or less. But I still do work on me because it's an ongoing project. And I tell people this all the time. Everyone should have a therapist. Everyone. There's something in your life or maybe in your past that has been unaddressed that's holding you back. Get a therapist. You've never been able to access them easier than you have been today. And as more and more, you know, advocates and mental health and awareness and discussion around it, the access to it is so much easier now than it used to be. There's still, of course, a stigma for some, but you got to get past that because you're investing in yourself. But that's how I got, you know, the burnout and all of that. Yep. And from there, I went, you know, my new job that I found in Toronto was in healthcare. My parents wanted to have me committed. They're like, are you crazy? You're going back to the field that almost killed you. And I said, I'm going to do it better. Yep. And I did. And I didn't work the crazy hours anymore. I was more productive. I was doing well. I was able to help with some expansion of some clinics and bringing on new people to provide more access to healthcare in an underserviced area and recruit new physicians and all the fun stuff that you get to do in healthcare. I was able to be successful and I wasn't burning out. As I was doing this, I started looking at my peers, and this was in 2015, and I'm looking going, uh-oh, these people look like they're burning out. So I was like, okay, I got to start warning them. So kind of went like Paul Revere, you know, the burnout is coming, the burnout is coming. And, you know, like I ignored it and didn't do anything with it. And I thought, well, I should dig into this a little bit more. So I started researching burnout and opened up that Pandora's box and the work that had been done for a long time. You know, Dr. Maslach out in California. I have a book that's titled, it's not my book, it's a book that was written and published in 1980 titled Burnout. So, and you read that book, and I read it every couple of years. I pull it out and look at it. And there's a couple things in there you can tell it's old, but some of that is like you could put in a book today and it would be applicable. And it's like, okay, well, humans haven't evolved that much. Okay, great. So it's something that's been around for a long time, but as discussion is happening and all of the different stressors that we're seeing in this world, it's a lot more amplified than it's ever been. And it's really concerning. So I thought after doing the research and I started writing about it, then it came to me that, you know, this is probably a path that I need to walk.
And so I went through the exercise of launching a business, launching the Breakfast Leadership Show, writing books, speaking on stages across the globe about it, and just, you know, being interviewed and magazine and print and radio and all of that. And it created, you know, a life of its own. And I joke with people, nothing would make me happier than if burnout would go away and then I'd have to go find something else to do. I would be thrilled. I'd be ecstatic.
Right.
But I don't anticipate that happening anytime soon. So the work that I have to do is still important. I still have to do it.
Absolutely. Yeah. So you went through that period of extreme burnout and experience of loss, which contributed to that as well. But then you were able to come out on the other side, work in the healthcare field, but do it differently and experience more productivity and more satisfaction, more fulfillment. But like you said, you were then seeing your peers, colleagues, people that were doing the same things, experiencing the burnout that you were had already gone through. So you knew the signs, you recognized it, but yet people aren't going to always identify it in themselves. So as you dug in further, you found a path that you're continuing to walk down today. Now, at the top of the show, when we were talking prior to going live here, you had mentioned to me that you would go through that experience again if you were to have to be able to get to where you are today. Tell us a little bit about that mindset, because I think there are a lot of people that would hear that story and say, that's crazy. I would never want to go through that. But sometimes you have to walk through difficulties.
Yeah, it's important. And I always like to say this when I'm on shows or being interviewed. 99% of people that are burned out or are burning out right now or approaching burnout do not need to reinvent their life. Because I think a lot of people think, whoa, I have to change everything. Does that mean, you know, does that mean I have to cheer for the Wolverines and I went to Michigan State? You know, what are you talking that kind of crazy level? It's like, or for me, you know, living in Toronto, does that mean I have to root for the Leafs and not the Red Wings? Not a chance. But anyway, that's another story for another day. But most people do not have to reinvent themselves. It's really, really tiny adjustments. I don't like saying the word change because that tends to run people out the door and they're scared and they disconnect from this interview and everything like that. It's adjustments. Yep. It's little things. What are they? That depends on you. Because a lot of people think that once you're burned out, that's the treadmill that you're always going to be on forever and ever. And that's not the case. If you make some adjustments, you can, you know, get back to a more normal-ish state for you. The deeper work, and this is where a lot of the work that I do with teams and, you know, when I'm coaching individuals as well, is we got to figure out why you burned out. What were the ingredients that turn this into the situation that you found? And that's why I went and pursued and I got my certifications in NLP and CBT, because I kept running against this when I was working with people, that it was the language they use in their mind, the behaviors, the thoughts, the patterns, all the things that they do. Well, I should do this. I'm a C-suite executive. I should work 40 hours a day. No, no. See, you're wearing yourself out. Your cognitive abilities drop. And I just saw a study this morning from the Journal of American Medicine that indicated that prolonged stress, intense stress, is impacting the cognitive ability of older people at a much more alarming rate than other age groups. That's impacting everybody. Yeah. We've seen studies on, you know, stress and burnout, how it impacts your cognitive ability, your ability to recognize patterns, your relationships, everything, which was was front and center on that. Right. Making mistakes, not doing things clearly, working too many hours didn't work out. I changed it. Okay, I'm gonna have boundaries around my work. Hey, wow, I'm getting more done. Weird. How's that happen? Well, it's because you're doing things more effectively. You're delegating. You have the right people in place to do things for you. Even if you're an individual, you know, sort things out. So there was a lot of work that I did on myself that, you know, makes a lot of sense. You know, it's like when you do a job, let's say you're working on some things all week and you know, if you schedule how you work and you schedule your life, you're going to be better at it because you're going to know what times are good for you to work and what times are not.
Right.
If you ask me right now at the time of this recording, okay, I want you to go through this spreadsheet. It's got a ton of numbers. Do some analysis on the reports and, you know, do some projections, financial projections and things like that. You might as well ask me to paint like Picasso. It's like, it's not going to happen because my cognitive abilities of looking and analyzing spreadsheets at this time of day is not strong. You ask me to do that in the morning around 8 or 9 a.m., not a problem. I know that about me. And one of the things that came about during the pandemic when so many people were working different hours than they were used to because maybe they had kids and they had help and all that, many people found that, you know, that 6 p.m. to 9 p.m. window, for some reason, for some people, that is a sweet spot for them as far as productivity, clarity. They've got a little bit of a groove, you know, they're bouncing around, they're enjoying what they're doing. It's everybody needs to find out when their sweet spot time is to work on things that they're working on. And if you can align that, it flows better. Just like you know, batching tasks. We've heard people say that. It's like there's a reason for that because certain tasks use certain parts of your brain. If you batch things together, then you're using one side of your brain and other things are the other side. And once you know what that is for you, all of a sudden you're getting more things done because you're not going against, you know, pressure or hurdles as much because you're just in a flow. And it's such a big, big deal to do that. But to go back to your original question about why would I go through that again and not change anything? Because then I wouldn't be who I am today. And all of our experiences, good, bad, indifferent, build us to who we are. You know, when people go through tough lives and they have challenges and they get bricks thrown at them, I tell them, stack those bricks. You'll be able to use them as steps and be able to ascend above all of that, and you'll find yourself in a better place. You look at all the successful people in the world, whatever you define as success, many of them slept in their car for the first 5 years of their career, or they were homeless, or they couldn't get any gigs, or they couldn't, no one would show up to their events, or they couldn't do this. And all of a sudden they just were persistent. They kept at it. And then finally they were able to get past some of that. And then you look at them like, wow, they're really successful. Yeah, they are. They put, you know, it's the 15-year overnight success story. Now, of course, in this world, there's always going to be those anomalies where somebody may come up with something and take right off. You know, I have, you know, a family member that growing up, you know, we're the same age, and he tried all kinds of different things and, you know, was clearly not somebody that would be comfortable working for somebody. He was definitely going to be an entrepreneur and was not, it didn't work. So, you know, his dad was the same way. And so, you know, he tried different things. And then finally, out of a hobby of something that he enjoyed, you know, there was equipment that he would use in this hobby. And he didn't like how it worked. So he started tinkering around, and then he ended up making something that he liked. And he's like, wow, this is much better. I like how this interacts with everything else. So he thought, you know what? Maybe I should, you know, try this out. And, you know, he demonstrated it to other people that, you know, would be in the same type of genre. And now there are world famous people using that equipment. And he is well off. He's never given me any money. I will never ask for any money. Because it's not like, oh wow, my cousin's rich, you know, okay, great. I'm his biggest cheerleader because I've known him since we were both babies, and I knew a long time ago. It's like, he's gonna keep at it and he's gonna do well. Did I think he was gonna be like this crazy? Well, no, but you know what? It's just, you just build and you keep at it and you keep at it. You know, if there's something you're thinking you're on the cusp of something, keep going. And success leaves clues. So study those that have been successful and like, okay, well, what did they do? And see if there's something that you can apply. And when you do that, it doesn't matter what you're doing in life, and your definition of success could be completely different from mine, but you tend to see, you know, a lot of similarities in when you ask people that are society deemed successful, you know, what was the changing point for you? You know, what does this create for you? And it's amazing to watch.
Absolutely. Yeah. I'll reemphasize one of those points that you made is that 99% of the people who are feeling burnt out don't have to reinvent themselves entirely. You know, there's some lifestyle changes, some changes in routines that can be made, just an evaluation of where you're feeling that burnout, where is it coming from, so that you can make some adjustments and get through that effectively. And like you said earlier, there's a value added to receiving therapy. There's another component that people can experience a benefit from if they're going through some very difficult and stressful periods of times in their lives. And also those individuals who are working 60, 70, 80 hours a week, you're probably going to be more productive if you work a little less, and you're going to last a whole lot longer in your business, in the work you're doing for your employer, as well as in life, your health, your relationships, your finances will all follow. So take a step back. Now, I do ask all of my guests a specific question. We're at that point in the show. If you were to be handed $1 million today, no restrictions, nothing specific, what would you do with that and why?
I would invest in my continued learning on being a better entrepreneur.
Okay.
It could be a combination of using some new tools, new technologies that make me a bit more efficient and or, you know, create better offerings or coaching techniques or whatever I provide for my customers. Sure. I mean, I could easily say, well, you know, pay off the house or pay off this or buy this. And And again, this goes back to your earlier question about, you know, why would I not change anything? When you lose everything, it gives you some insights on what's truly important in life. Cars, I don't care about cars. Home, roof, shelter, warm in the winter, cool in the summer, I'm good. Toys and fun stuff and the latest, you know, smartphone or computers or things like that. This version of the phone is, you know, 3 years newer than the one I have. Okay. Does it still work? Yep. Great. I don't need that. And I'm not knocking people that want it. I mean, there's reasons why you might need the latest and greatest, especially if you use like a smartphone, for example. If you're, you know, into photography and this is your device, it makes sense for you. It's a business tool and you want to do that. But for me, when you lose everything, gives you perspective. It doesn't mean that I am this minimalist and go, I don't own anything. I have one fork and one plate and one spoon. That's a little excessive. That can cause you some stress because you're constantly going to be washing. Your hands are going to get chapped, and unless you're wearing gloves, and I think a lot of people are tired of wearing gloves after the last few years. So it's like, you know, you have things in your life that are useful and beneficial to you to make your life easier for you to focus your time on doing what only you can do. And that's not just for an entrepreneur. That's if you're a spouse, a partner, a parent, a caregiver, a colleague, a boss, whatever. Try to streamline and simplify as much of your life as you can so that you, when you are doing things, you're fully present. You're not being hampered by, well, I got to do this or I got to do that. And everybody's different when it comes to that. But, you know, find what makes you fulfilled in life and create a life that is fulfilling for you. And we all get to do that because it's our life. Yes, we might have to make some difficult choices and we may have to make some adjustments in our life that may not be popular with others. But you got to take care of you first.
Yeah, absolutely. Finding that point of fulfillment for yourself and what that means to you is key as well as that own your own definition of success, your neighbor's definition, the media's definition, the celebrity's definition. My definition of success is going to be different than yours. So finding that for yourself is key and important. Now, if anybody wants to reach out to you, what's the best way for someone to connect to you to discuss these topics or others?
Yeah, the best way first is to go to breakfastleadership.com. There's a contact link and page on this. So they can send me a note there. I'm on most of the social media channels. It's usually under the letter B and then Fast Leadership. Do not put that on a license plate. You'll get pulled over a lot. So don't do that. But I'm on most of the social media channels. Pretty active on LinkedIn, but I'm on Instagram and Twitter. A little bit with TikTok now, but I'm just repurposing stuff that I put elsewhere. You know, my YouTube channel and all that. I'm starting to build that and doing more video stuff. And then, of course, there's the Breakfast Leadership Show podcast on all your favorite flavors. And you know about it because you were on my show yesterday. So it's it worked out really well that we got to chat again on this. So, but breakfastleadership.com will get you the links to, you know, all those pathways, you know, links to my books and everything else.
Yeah, no, I encourage people to definitely reach out, check out Michael's stuff, check out his books as well. And if you're experiencing burnout in your own life, or if you're not, but you see that you're already walking that path of a stressful existence, busy, doing a lot of work, a lot of hours, have a lot going on, look into what that means to be burnt out, what that would look like if you were to get to that point, and start doing some things proactively now so that you don't get to that point in your life that you're experiencing a lot of things falling to the wayside. So I encourage you to check out Michael's books, check out his website, reach out to him, and make sure that you're walking that life that's defined for yourself, fulfillment, success, and the way that you see it to become. Michael, thank you very much for joining us on today's show.
Really appreciate your time today. Thank you.
All right. It's been a pleasure.